The North Texas stories you need to know. This is the All Local from News Radio 1080 KRLD.
From the courts, a huge verdict in that civil suit against Amber Geiger. She's the cop that got convicted of murdering Botham Jean. L.P. Phillips has been following this trial.
The Dallas federal court jury settled on a figure of $98.6 million that'll go to the family of Botham Jean. It's huge, but mostly symbolic, since Geiger is in prison serving a 10-year murder term. Allison Jean, mother of Botham Jean, is pleased with the judgment, but made a point to say Geiger was not in court for the civil trial and has never apologized to the family.
It just shows that she didn't take accountability for her actions. And she failed up to now to reach out to our family and say anything.
Geiger shot Jean in 2018 after going to the wrong floor of her apartment building and mistaking Jean for an intruder. From the 24-hour news center, L.P. Phillips News, Radio 1080 KRLD.
And there's an update to another trial out of North Texas. A federal court judge sentenced Dr. Reynaldo Ortiz to 190 years in prison. He poisoned IV bags at an outpatient center. He injected them with lethal drugs.
I'm glad to see justice was served. I'm sorry he wasn't there to hear the words from all the victims.
Are you sorry or mad he wasn't there?
I'm mad that he wasn't there, but it's okay. We were hurt.
He chose not to attend the hearing. Prosecutors say six people got hurt by him.
Well, starting next fall, anyone from a family making less than 100 grand a year will receive free tuition and fees at the University of Texas system.
A committee at the UT Board of Regents gave preliminary approval to expand the Promise Plus program. The expansion is the latest move by the Regents to make college more affordable for students. David Dillard with the KD College Prep says it doesn't cover everything, though.
You're still going to have to meet the academic standards. You're still going to have to pay for living expenses, which are more than the tuition and fees. So it won't take care of everybody.
Program was started back in 2019 to any family making less than 65 grand. The UT system says the program has also helped with student debt, which has declined from 54% in 2019 to 48% in 2023. From the 24-hour news center, Austin York, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
DFW Airport expecting the biggest travel season yet for Thanksgiving. More than 3 million people going through the big airport starting tomorrow through December 3rd. That's almost 5.5% higher than this time last year. DFW says the weekends before and after Thanksgiving could be the busiest, with more than 250,000 passing through every single day on those peak days. Where are they headed? Mostly places like New York, LA, and Chicago.
Well, yesterday we talked about DFW Airport starting construction on its sixth terminal, and now we're learning more about how it will work. Executive Vice President Mohamed Charkas says Terminal F will have room to expand.
From our airline and internal stakeholders to our team charged with delivery of the future of DFW, the innovative joint venture delivering DFW 6th Terminal, we are working together to make the next 50 years the best 50 years.
And they're going to need room to grow because the first 15 gates won't have any space to check bags or go through security. You're going to check in at Terminal E and then take Skylink across International Parkway to the new terminal. Terminal F should open in 2027.
A lot of us looking forward to Thanksgiving, but a lot of service members have to spend it away from home.
The USO is filling 1,000 care packages here at DFW Airport.
I can't tell you what a difference just this little snack pack is going to make when I sit and have lunch with service members and talk about what they miss. It's often the food. It's often the Oreo cookies, the M&Ms, you know, but most importantly, what we're doing is we're giving it to them with a hug and a smile.
Jennifer Walquist says these packages can give troops a reminder of home, but Airport Chief Executive Sean Donahue hopes people will remember their families this time of year, too.
And they take on more of a burden. They also deserve our thanks and our recognition as well.
Volunteers from DFW Airport and Suffolk Construction helped fill the packages for the USO. At DFW Airport, Alan Skaya, News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Start with what's going on in Washington right now as the drama continues during the Trump transition. Donald Trump is making more cabinet picks. Yesterday announcing that Dr. Oz would be his nominee to lead the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. He's going to be running that, pending Senate approval, of course. And former WWE executive Linda McMahon is going to be serving as Secretary of Education. Education Department, that's one that Trump has said he wants to get rid of. But for now, it exists, and he wants Linda McMahon to run it. And this morning, he announced former Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker to be his NATO ambassador. Oh, not real thrilled about NATO either. It's other nominees, though, like Matt Gaetz for Attorney General, RFK Jr. to run the Health Department, Pete Hegseth as Defense Secretary. Those are still getting a lot of attention as well. Now, today, J.D. Vance, he's soon to be vice president. He'll be on Capitol Hill meeting with senators in an effort to earn some votes for some of these picks. We're joined right now by SMU political science professor Matt Wilson. Trump's motive in some of these picks, is it rewarding loyalty, or is it a loyalty test for some Senate Republicans, or maybe both?
I think it's both, and it is also a signal of his policy priorities. So it's a combination of a lot of different things. And, you know, we've seen a real diversity of different sorts of folks appointed to these positions. Some of them have been relatively conventional, straightforward picks that have garnered, you know, widespread support and praise. Others have been very outside the box and quite controversial. So it's been a mix, but definitely Trump sees it as a way to reward loyalty to him and also to test the loyalty among those Republicans in the Senate on Capitol Hill.
I know J.D. Vance is with Matt Gaetz today. They're going around talking to some senators. What is he telling them right now?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, Matt Gaetz is the most controversial of Trump's nominees to this point. He's the one, I think, whose face is the biggest uphill battle for confirmation. I would imagine that what these senators would want to hear is that Gaetz actually has thought through how he would manage the Justice Department and that he is focused on something other than just Trump's vendettas against those who pursued him during his first administration. Because, of course, even if people agree with Trump about the weaponization of the Justice Department and needing to make some reforms to the quote-unquote deep state, there's also the matter of actually, administering things like the FBI and federal law enforcement and the whole range of activities that the Justice Department is supposed to do. So they'll want to make sure from Gaetz that he has thought through that, he's prepared to do that, and that he can do that effectively rather than just going in with a vendetta against those who sought to prosecute Trump.
Now, we keep hearing about these recess appointments as well. Is that his safety net in case things go sideways in the Senate?
It is something that he could potentially make use of. I mean, it's not ideal in the sense that someone who gets a recess appointment can only serve for 2 years. And so that's, less than ideal. Also, it will engender some ill feeling with people on Capitol Hill because it clearly is an attempt to make an end run around the confirmation power and authority that's granted to the Senate. So I would think that recess appointments would only be used, certainly should only be used, if the Senate becomes obstructive and drags the hearings on and on and on and refuses to give the nominee an up or down vote. In a case like that, I think the president might be justified in saying, well, they won't vote on my nominee. They're dragging this process out forever. Let's try to use a recess appointment. But it really shouldn't be used as a way to get around the constitutional power of the Senate to reject a nominee if they see fit.
And how often does that happen? I'm having a hard time remembering when one. Maybe didn't the Obama administration have an issue with some of their appointments?
Yeah, I mean, typically in recent administrations, there have been one or two nominees who have run into trouble on Capitol Hill and had to either withdraw or else get voted down by the Senate. A famous one that kind of started that process was way back in the 1980s, that has a Texas connection, was Senator John Tower, who was appointed by George H.W. Bush to be Secretary of Defense, and that was ultimately voted down by the Senate. And ever since then, typically each incoming president has run into trouble with one or two of his nominees. But certainly we have never seen a case where the Senate has rejected, four, five, six nominees. So I would imagine that Trump will end up getting the great majority, even of these people that some have flagged as controversial.
We've discussed this, Austin and I, that is Matt Gaetz kind of a that he's getting thrown out there as a sacrificial lamb of sorts to take people's attention away from all the other ones, so they kind of sneak in?
I mean, there may be an element of that. I don't know that that's what Trump initially intended, but if he is getting the sense from Republican senators that Gates is a no-go, he may press ahead with it, knowing that Gates will ultimately go down, making Gates essentially a sacrificial lamb, saying, fine, if you're going to reject Gates, then the expectation is that you will move to confirm some of my other controversial but somewhat less controversial nominees to other positions. So in that sense, you know, Gates could end up serving as a shield for some of Trump's other picks.
Exactly. Interesting. All right, Matt, listen, thanks so much. Really appreciate it on the short notice. Matt Wilson, SMU, political science professor with us. All right, it's 11:18 right now at KRLD. Stick around. We're going to talk about the big Rust premiere last night. Alec Baldwin, he was a no-show. And the high cost of Thanksgiving dinner, it's not quite as high this year as it has been.
Now, the top three things you need to know.
Number three, Pro Football Hall of Fame semifinalists have been announced this morning. They include Cowboy safety Darren Woodson, former Giants quarterback.
We're going to find out, though. Let's bring in KRLD's Chris Fox. He is in Austin with more.
Yeah, I think what was most shocking wasn't that it passed, but it was so close. Three Republicans on the State Board of Education voting against. Some saying that this is a cultural literacy program to help kids who are having learning disabilities. And the controversy around the content is kind of overshadowing whether this is actually going to help teach children how to read, which is one of the interesting arguments against, at least by some of the board members. Other arguments against by the Texas Freedom Network had a report basically saying that Christianity was overemphasized and it offered very little coverage of other major religions and faith traditions, and a clear implication being that Christianity was more important and deserving more attention than other religions. One of the most interesting testimonies that I heard on Monday was from a Jewish grandmother named Barbara Baruch, and she said that that her grandchildren should share her family's religion and ask the board to help stopping the government from teaching them to be Christians. And it was kind of a powerful statement she made, and she addressed each one of the board members individually in a way that was just kind of powerful.
What would this entail exactly? Because we've been hearing so much about this hardcore Bible curriculum in Oklahoma. Would this be similar, or would this be like Oklahoma Light?
I'm guessing Oklahoma Light. But what we're basically figuring out based on those who have reviewed the curriculum itself, and it is optional. Let's not forget that. But it stresses things like the kindergartners, the golden rule, and then goes into teaching on the Sermon on the Mount. Also parables like the prodigal son and the good Samaritan. Also Da Vinci's Last Supper. So it kind of touches all aspects of religion and the origin of religion. And it is a little bit lighter, obviously. Well, one of the interesting points made by an SMU religious studies professor was that it is in kind of violation of the TEKS, the Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills Standards that are already in place that say world religion and religion, world religion, and world history should only be taught in junior high and high school, not in elementary school. So also we're probably looking at what we generally look at here. I covered the legislature in the even years, and then when it's implemented in the odd years, I cover all the legal action against it.
Yeah.
So this is definitely going to be one that will be played out in the courts.
And that's what I wanted to mention. You said it's optional, but if the schools do opt in, they get a financial reward. Is that correct?
Yeah, it comes with, I've heard $60 per student if the school. Yeah, there's obvious financial incentive for schools to opt into this program. And it's kind of at a period of time where a lot of the funding to public schools has been kind of withheld.
The All Local is updated three times a day. For the latest news, weather, and traffic, listen to News Radio 1080 KRLD. Visit KRLD.com, download the Odyssey app, or ask your smart speaker to play News Radio 1080 KRLD.